listening to the Limalista podcast between. This is Jason Horsley, and this week I'm sharing some highlights from the last All Guys Affinity Group, which is a meeting space that I hold on Tuesday mornings, Western time, for men only. If you want to know more about how to participate, you can get that information at the end of this podcast.
Finding it very difficult to find my voice recently, and I think that's what's led me here to a certain degree, because I've been traveling since 2008, and moved to California in the last sort of 8 years, I was in a really good place when I got here, and I left a really good situation to come here. And I'm coming out of physical things around me, which have been in complete turmoil. I went through a divorce, and my work is very central to my being. I can apply my, I'm a creative person, and I'm a very sensitive person as well. But it's very useful to be sensitive in my business side of my creativity, because it allows me to create. We talk about identities. I mean, quite a lot of my weeks and days is creating identities for other people. And I've really neglected myself, and I've found that I've put bits of my ID in other people to help them find themselves, whether it's visually or literally in some places, or even metaphorically. But I've gone through a lot of soul searching in the last sort of 2 years, 3 years, and this has been sort of combined with my social groups sort of going through disintegrations, not being around the people that traditionally have been my family, and my friends have been my family. I don't really have a family, so I kind of found myself in this situation where I've been very isolated, and I don't have any problem meeting people. I'm quite a social person on the exterior, I think. I've kind of gone through this situation of losing myself and finding myself. This has been a Saturday was kind of like a godsend in a certain way, because it was so nice to sort of meet all these people that I've never seen before. In some cases, I've seen just in recent weeks, but just to sort of have that connection of honesty and feeling of the zeitgeist, if you like. Definitely finding a lot of parallels with what's being said today from the group. Not in an egotistical, narcissistic way, but very much reflections of things that I'm going through. And one of the things that I'm discovering is that I've got abandonment issues myself, because I've invested a lot of time in things and people, and those things have you know, I've had to go through a series of recent sort of experiences where I've, you know, I've had to let go of those things. And so I come, you know, I can relate to what John's saying. I've got trepidation in sort of investing time in things and people. And, you know, I'm on my guard a little bit too. You know, one of the things I've discovered is, you know, this whole process, even in the last sort of 3 weeks, has connected me very much to trying to communicate myself and my, you know, get into my body and find out what, you know, what's happening. I've got some very, a lot of anxiety around my father, and he's never really been part of my life. And so that, I think, contributes to my abandonment issues. And so I've been very susceptible to males that have a voice of reason, because I have a tendency to listen to them. But being 48, you know, I've gone through, you know, quite a series of, you know, quite a lot of the time I've found that, you know, those things have haven't been what they're meant to be for me. So yeah, I'm slightly worried in that respect. I think that's, if it, you know, if I want to be open about that. But, you know, I'm also very charged by all the things that are coming to me from all of this. And I'm having to deal with that. But I am finding it very difficult to express myself. I'm actually dyslexic, which doesn't help. No one, I haven't really told anyone that. And I've been a copywriter for God knows how long. I'm finding all these challenges interwoven with this sort of recent 2-3 weeks of being in this space of shining the light on these aspects. And I'm a very driven person. I've got quite a lot of projects on, and I've kind of buried myself and not giving myself the space to sort of to really sort of go into all of these things. So I'm finding this whole process a real challenge, and a real challenge to articulate how I'm feeling to start off with. So, but I'm not frightened of doing it, which is why I'm decided to take the plunge and chat now. I was kind of half thinking of sitting back and listening, but I feel like this is the right thing to do, and I feel trust in all of you to be able to do that, which I think in itself is warming. But Saturday I went to the transmission, and it was a very tough one because it was talking about ancestors. And I really have an elephant in the room with all of this, because I have a relationship with a dad that's still alive that has never been really a relationship. And, you know, I'm finding it very difficult to how to figure that one out. And, you know, I like to think that I'm a kind person and I'm forgiving and all of that, but without labouring too much about the detail, it was a very abusive relationship when I was young, and it really hasn't stopped being that way. A couple of years ago, my brother got married, and I was reminded of that all over again, and it really threw me off after going through a divorce. So part of why I'm here is that journey of connecting to myself and repairing and becoming whole again. So it has been difficult to sort of connect. You know, I've always had a tendency to overthink, I think. Anyway, I think I'll leave it there for now. Thank you.
Thanks, Simon. I've only seen you, I mean, we've only just met, so I've only heard you speak a few times, but you articulated much more clearly that time, I think, than I've heard you articulate. You only said sort of about 4 or 5 times, and I noticed it's one of your verbal tics is saying sort of a lot, like qualifying everything you say. And this is obviously in a very short period I've known you, but you weren't doing it as much today. And at the same time, what I experienced when you were speaking was you were communicating a great deal in terms of affect. Like there was a great deal of feeling in what you were saying. So it made it very, very clear to me. In fact, while you were saying that you have difficulty articulating, you were articulating very well. And it's become almost a theme recently that I've noticed this, when people are aware that they can't express and they're expressing their inability to express, they're also expressing much more clearly. And in terms of what you expressed, clearly this would be related to, because what you're expressing, for me anyway, what Simon was expressing was pretty much close to the core of something anyway. And it did come up on Sunday because I overheard Dave talking about on Sunday in terms of how he had spoken to somebody and become aware that their original experience of love was so painful, or an early experience of love was so painful, that they associated love with pain, and whenever they started to feel love, they started to feel pain. Paraphrasing, but just wanted to respond something to what Simon was saying, because I'm feeling a lot of pain, and I was feeling a lot of pain on Sunday, and I felt, I wasn't actually at the Sunday event, I was packing and posting, you know, getting the books ready, so I didn't pay to attend because I wasn't going to attend, but I was overhearing stuff in the other room, including when Dave was talking about me. And in fact, obviously then I paid special attention. In fact, I came downstairs, I thought, oh, Dave's talking about me. And it sounded like it was something positive, but it turned out it wasn't. Like he was saying stuff that was quite hurtful, for me, and it triggered it's like activated some, or opened an old wound, I think, around this that, and I think that you were expressing this, Simon, that having experienced abandonment so early and so painfully and perhaps so often, although I think when we repeat and reenact things, it's not necessarily abandonment. In my case, I would just leave. I would be the one who abandoned, or I would push people away, or both. But still, it's trying to reenact some original experience. Betrayal is also another word, but I think fits a lot of these early wounds, because an abandonment by a caregiver is a betrayal. I forgot what I was saying. I kind of lost the thread there, but oh yeah, what Simon was saying, that when we start to open up again and to feel like, oh, this is the thing that I was always lacking and always wanting, as in we start to feel love and trust and connection, then it can provoke a great deal of anxiety that it's going to happen again. And this might be particularly so, at least it's come up here around fathers. And then what John B was expressing around the fear of getting into something that might be a cult, or most cults center around a strong male figure. Sometimes it's a woman, but generally speaking, a cult leader is, and if a cult leader is a man, and he usually is, it's because he's a surrogate father. He's answering those patterns of need and abandonment in other people's psyches. So, I mean, this core issue that we carry around with us, it's not as though we can spiritually bypass it. But the kind of conundrum is we probably can't resolve it through psychotherapeutic methods. Freud was 150 years ago, and the world is no less fucked up for Freudian psychoanalysis. This much is clear. So although there's a lot of value in those tools, the way we use them determines the outcome, and if we don't know how to use them, we might make a big old mess. And B, even using them well, they're probably not sufficient. Well, they're not. Without some sort of intervention of what Dave calls the transmission, without connecting to our souls, to the transmission, no amount of analysis is going to resolve it. But where there's an intersection, I would say, is that when we enter into these interactive relations, we start to open up and the wound starts to open up and we start to unconsciously reenact. So some psychological understanding is very useful, and that awakening of old trauma is somehow, somebody just used the word portal, but they were talking about spontaneity, Joe, is a portal for the transmission, I would say, the crisis, the opportunity of crisis, because we're open and we want with all of our being to receive what we're opening to. We want it so badly that then there's a counter measure, which is to close down. We better close down before the knife comes in again. And if I can stay open while I'm in the throes of that, then the spirit enters through the wound. There's a saying that you've probably heard. Well, thanks, Simon, for sharing that. I think it was very helpful.
Yeah, thanks. I also recognize that because this year I had so stressful and terrible and like so devastating experience with one woman, I was kind of like still carrying something which came out when I met a new woman. There was some sort of fear of history repeating. But luckily I chose chose trustworthy people to work with, and they were nothing like her. But I still like I had this idea that they, or this strong feeling that they are just gonna help me to heal, and I would love to have them as friends, but still I don't feel this very strong romantic pull, or this magical connection. I haven't felt with anybody yet, so there still might be some more stuff to come out. If I'm able to counter another sort of like really, really, really meaningful and special relationship. But yeah, you don't know about my details, and I'm not going to go them because I've been talking so much about them in this first class of these meetings. But yeah, I can truly relate to this, what Jason said, that the trauma activates, and then I go into this state where I'm no longer with the person and in the place where I am, but I go into some sort of trauma space, or I get sucked into it. And it's very helpful to hear that it can be used as a portal for the transmission of the spirit, or profound change and the release of all the traumatic stuff that's pushed into the body. So it's a matter of perception, I think, and also this surrendering to the experience. And also that, hey, in my heart, I feel that it's going to be different this time. So I'm not going to bring the past into the moment.
Yeah.
I have to say, I think, thank you, Jason. I think it is sense of betrayal as opposed to abandonment. And, you know, I'm not frightened to face that again. It's just, you know, these are feelings that are surfacing up again. And one of the things that was said on Sunday was we have gatekeepers, which I felt was quite a useful way of personifying this in a metaphorical, perhaps metaphorical way. And it's facing that gatekeeper. It's going past that gatekeeper, but it's that internal sort of dialogue of, you know, pushing past and making that gatekeeper obsolete. You know, for further clarification, the relationships that this has occurred has always been either as a mentor or as a, you know, a surrogate father, son, and those things have been perpetuated by, in some cases, literally with someone, you know, offering and suggesting that they are, you know, a father, and then they're ending in some kind of betrayal. So, yeah, I mean, that's really useful insight. Thank you.
I just respond, Simon, that it would be strange if you weren't frightened of re-entering into that. So don't be afraid of being frightened, because it would be a natural and even a healthy response. And for me personally, I acknowledge there's a lot of anxiety around that, and that the anxiety is already there. I'm already carrying it around, and so it can be triggered not even by a hint of betrayal, but as I said, just by it's not even the possibility of betrayal, but that I'm putting myself in a position or a situation where it would become possible. As in, if I'm putting real trust and opening and loving somebody, then part of me goes into hyper alert for some sort of betrayal, and the gatekeepers, they move into position and they get ready. I did feel betrayed by what I heard Dave say about me on Sunday, and I don't want to focus on it because I don't want it to, for other people to get curious, or if you were there, think, I don't want to big it up. I just want to use it as an example, because otherwise it can be too abstract. The part of the way the gatekeepers work is they look for anything that is similar to or familiar to some past experience that will then justify them moving in and shutting down the system. So yeah, the first whiff of some sort of untrustworthiness in the case that Simon's talking about, or insensitivity is my experience with Dave. And it's full kind of red alert. The system goes into red alert. So that's a form of identity crisis, the identity. Yeah. All hands on deck. We're going down. Right. Even before anything's really happened. I mean, it's a blurry area, especially when you're in it. Because clearly something's happened if we get triggered. Something's triggered us. Anyway, I just turned into a bit of a long response, but I just wanted to just question what Simon said about not being frightened, because it's not really consistent that you wouldn't be frightened if you were feeling that way. I think what, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what Simon was saying was it's not going to stop him from staying open. But that's what courage is. Courage isn't not being afraid. Courage is moving forward despite being afraid.
Just quickly add, in a physical way, I've practiced quite a lot of martial arts, and when you're sparring with someone, you're usually predetermining whether or not you're going to get smacked or not. So in predetermining you're going to get smacked or not, you duck, or you flinch, or you're kind of constantly in movement. And I feel like it is a natural response to suddenly, sort of move out of the way.
Brian, you're looking very wistful, or a little bit wistful. So felt compelled to get your attention. Is anything coming up for you?
Just a bit from what Hugo said earlier, relating to tension. I didn't attend the weekend events, but from the previous event, I sent some feedback to Dave, and it just, he replied like tense and an exclamation mark. So instead of ignoring that, I just said, like, I just tried to, just trying to kind of notice these micro tensions and microaggressions that appear. It's kind of it's a subtle process of trying to find this discomfort and to see where it's coming from, and just to acknowledge it, really. And a few weeks ago, I was watching a MMA fight with Khabib. He's the guy who is he's unbeaten. He's really good in it, and I didn't really understand it, like his technique, until I watched this fight just against another guy, and I was just thinking exactly about what Simon said about these micro movements, and like when you're in clenches and you're fighting with someone, and it's all like minute kind of details and sensations and feelings, and I was watching him really closely in this fight, and it was just all that, you know. He was able to like kind of slip out of positions and just sudden movements. It was just really interesting. I found it amazing, just to, because I would have like dismissed that kind of thing as just, oh, it's just a brutal fight, but then when I was watching him a bit closer, it was just all, yeah, just as Simon mentioned, there's just micro twitches and flinches and predictions. So I thought it was pretty interesting what some sports people can do. I wonder how, like, in the body they are, and yeah, how much attention they're paying to their body, and you know, it's fun. I found it quite interesting. Yeah, that's all that just came at the moment.
Yeah, it is interesting. Thanks, Brian. I find that interesting too, because I mean, I haven't done much martial arts, so I can't really refer to that particular model, but the thing about, because when Simon was saying that it's natural to make a defensive or to dodge, it seemed to me that yes, but it's also presumably to be good at martial arts, one wants to stay relaxed and fluid, and sometimes often when one does react, that shows a weakness or one comes off balance and so on. And so part of the training is about not reacting, not reacting but consciously responding, and not meeting force with force, for example, and not giving in to, etc. And how this relates to this thing of not being being triggered, and how when we're triggered, we're off balance, and the gatekeepers kick in, and we tense up, and then what Brian's saying occurred to me that it might be easy for some of us to inhibit our stronger, bigger reactions, so that we've learned not to flinch, we learn not to dodge, we learn not to hit back or whatever. So we think we maintain some semblance of outer calm, cool, but we're still flinching internally, or there's still these micro movements. And that's so then we might as well. I mean, if we're going to react and flinch and be triggered internally, might as well show it. It's at the subtler level that we really get crippled. And I think Dave has addressed this over the years, this thing about feelings and strong feelings, which of course being triggered is all about strong feelings, that it's better to let them out. That's part of spontaneity, and it's a very fine line, because of course the identity gets triggered, the gatekeepers kick in. Chenim has touched on this a number of times recently. It can get quite ugly. We can be reacting and making the situation worse, and certainly making what people think of us worse, or what we think people think of us worse, etc., etc. But what I've found through 10 years of marriage, and I apply this with Dave too, is that, and it is, it's an interesting challenge with somebody who's apparently enlightened and who makes that claim and can back it up in so many different ways. Well, if anyone can take all of that, a full onslaught of my triggered infant self, it should be Dave, the enlightened guy. It's what he's being paid for. It's not entirely sure it's what somebody else says, but it's part of his job requirement, and ditto in a totally different way in a long-term relationship with a partner, that a partner has to be ready and willing for that to see and experience those sides of us. So anyway, so I've learned to, for better or for worse, I've learned to really let those reactive, strong emotional responses show and express, so that I can see them and so that others can see them, and rather than pretending that I'm not flinching, that I'm not hurt, that I'm not afraid. And I don't think it's a solution per se, but it is, I think it's part of the solution, to not suppress the part that's afraid, that's angry, that's distressed, that's in pain. It's been suppressed our whole lives. Didn't make it go away. We're not martial arts, we're not black belts of human relations, we're just not.
Yes, at least our closest relationships should be places where we can fully express ourselves in any situation. And also, it's a bit of responsibility not to let things go really, really out of hand. So, but to keep it all in, yeah, that's a terrible idea.
I think it's interesting the metaphors are being used, because when I was younger, I lived with my cousin, and he was right into boxing, and I ended up doing quite a lot of boxing training with him. And it's very much about attacking, if you like, and it's very confrontational. And in more recent years, I've been doing I've been doing Tai Chi for a long time, but I went and found some guys that were doing push hands, which is it's an exercise in Tai Chi where you sort of, it's like two person. So I'm just trying to show you a bit like what it looks like, but you're actually using some sort of forms. It starts off when you're practicing, you do certain forms, but you're basically pushing against each other. And the idea is that you get used to the energy that's coming through, and it's very important to be soft, and it's very important to be really responsive to the energy, because the starting point is just get building sensitivity, but ultimately it becomes it sort of blends into the martial aspects, and some of the exercises that we did were maintaining balance. And so quite often my rookie mistakes, you go to push hard, and people that are really sensitive can feel that force coming before you even start, and then they actually drag you. So it's sort of like the essence is sometimes there's a confrontational force where the sparks are, or you can actually, if you sense that coming through, it's all about just flying with it, and actually you can drag people along, or you can do whatever you want to do. And but the starting point of that is that sensitivity and being able to just be comfortable. I mean, for me, it took a long time to just get comfortable with, it's ironic, like I found boxing wasn't as because you're separate from someone's energy, and you're trying to move in. But with push hands, you're really close, and it's very tactile, and you're in there, and you're in the energy of another person, and you're feeling it. At the same time as being rooted to the ground. So I think just for that metaphor, I just wanted to raise that, because quite often that's probably more relative for, with long-term relationships or intimate relationships, being in that energy. And I suppose for all relationships in some ways, but being able to recognize the energy that's coming at you, and whether you can, the right response is is to push or to pull, I suppose is where I'm coming from.
I think that makes a lot of sense, Hugo, with the connectivity of everything, and where I think another Davism I picked up on was how energy ends and begins, and how everything's kind of interlocked, and that sort of metaphorical way that you would be with someone there is very much a demonstration of that in play, especially if you're moving in some way, outside of your main body area, especially. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, to sort of carry this metaphor one step further as well. I mean, traditionally in boxing, one of the movements is to slip. And when you slip, you move forward into the punch, which is counterintuitive to be moving out the way. But actually it puts you in a better position to follow on with the next action. So that sort of that counterintuitive movement of following into the punch or following into the pain, if we look at it in terms of a comparison to our body experience with discomfort, actually sets you up for a far greater counter reaction that puts you past the initial threat, if you like.
So this is how I began this meeting, was that I was triggered and I felt raw and overwhelmed by all the pressures, and so I wanted to just, you know, withdraw and crawl under the sheets and cut off connections with everyone and everything. But I knew that I wasn't going to do that, number one. And number two, that what Simon just said, that the best move is the opposite, to the counterintuitive one, or the one that's the opposite of what the gatekeepers or the reaction is telling us to do, is actually to push further into the realm of fraught, anxiety-producing human interactivity. And it is energetic, of course. Like, I think I'm a person living inside this body, and that my real experience is mental, emotional, and physical. But only because I've managed to repress the awareness of the psychosomatic experience with the energetic experience, which is just that we're all interconnected, and that what I am at the center of my existence is existence, is all of us. And that's not some blissful kumbaya, hold hands on the top of a hill in the Swiss Alps, singing The Sound of Music. Mix my cultural narratives there a bit. It might be at some point, but right now it really isn't. It's very fraught and frightening. And of course, it's not just here in the present. We're somewhat choosing our affinities and finding our affinities and finding groups where it does feel safe enough to at least imagine, or at least allow for some awareness of that. But it extends to the whole ancestral pool and the whole human field. It's election day as well, so the human field is very, in the US, is super agitated right now. We already know that, but I mean even more than ever today. So yeah, energetically, of course, it's overwhelming, and there certainly are times to withdraw. I mean, the boxer isn't always just going into the punches, is he? Sometimes it's, you know, definitely a time to duck, and the bell does ring eventually. Thank God, we do get those little breaks. We get our brows mopped by our minion. Not quite sure where the minion comes into this, but anyway, metaphors always break down eventually. Somebody just unmute.
Yeah, I was unmuting just to go with the metaphor, boxing metaphor, taking a punch to give a better punch. That's a circle, that's a cycle. You're not going to sit there and keep taking punches. You take one punch to give a better punch. That's the transmute. That's the result. That's where you end up. You know, that's the space you become. The process, whatever. I can't really think of a word for it. But yeah, you don't just sit there and take punches. You take one punch to give that better punch. And you take that punch, but you know, you face the fears, you face the anger, you face the tension. You know, you become aware of it so that you can affect action, you know, getting it out like that. Yeah. At least that's my own interpretation of the discussion, which is my own sort of way of digesting it.
We probably have to be careful if we don't want to turn into a real fight club. And then we'll never get any women in here.
I guess I just want to point out one synchronicity. I listened to this astrology podcast. I've gotten into astrology this year. It's a big kick. And one of the astrologers brought up this MMA guy, this undefeated dude, and he went on about how they're both, the guy was born in a Mars station or whatever, retrograde in his birth chart or something, so it was a big thing. And then the guy retired after the fight. So it was just really cool that it came up in the meeting today. Really cool.
Through the night, bless your heart. sweet friend. May you come in down to the river's end.
Just another thing, looked at a video by the guy who sponsored Dave's embodiment event, and he was into kind of natural movements and stuff, and I saw something that just clicked with me. It was to do with he called it rough housing, and he said the importance of rough housing when you're young, you know, when you're battling a young someone your own size when you're young and pushing them around, and I just found that that was so important growing up. It was so much fun, and when you get to know and play with people in a certain way, so even from a young age, it's like that push and pull is good for you. Like you learn from it in some way.
That would be about a positive imprint, wouldn't it, of being in other people's space or having people in your space and being manhandled, literally, or boy-handled. Because I don't think that I had that. I had a brother who bullied me in subtle ways, and maybe not so subtle too, that I don't remember, and actually some non-subtle that I do remember. So yeah, he bullied me, call a spade a spade. And a few nights ago, I woke up from a dream in which I was being attacked in bed by a man, like a man's weight on me. And I don't remember the details, but I remember that it was an affect dream. I felt it physically in my body rather than visually. So it's possible that if we have a negative imprint, or the more that we have a negative imprint of being touched in those formative years, the harder it is for us to let others get close to us. The harder it is for us to have boundaries as well, clear boundaries. And now we have a whole world that's mandating a 6 feet distance.
Yeah, this is John S. Great to be here. I had to go to work, so can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, John. Can't see you.
Yeah, I had to go to work, so I'm in the car, and I probably can't turn my camera on. So, I just wanted to tune into the energy, the group energy. Like I always say, I had a definite shift once I came into the group from this morning. I guess I was my nervous system was somewhat agitated, I guess, overnight, and into the morning hours when I woke up, it was still dark out. So I just got up really early. I wasn't sleeping that well, but it was like my just like an uneasiness, or I think that's pretty pervasive in the States right now, just based on, you know, the election day and everything. And so it was interesting that you mentioned that you kind of had the same symptoms as me. Just a lot of uncertainty in the air right now, I guess, is what's going on. It'll be nice to get this election over and everybody to move on, because I was reading some things about what's going on in other countries, and people are in lockdown. It's kind of a scary thought that if it's going to come to America, I mean, we're not in lockdown. We don't have many restrictions, but I think that's a lot of my anxiety right now is just what's going on in the world. I have had some anxiety, and I was at the call on Sunday, and I was there on Saturday. During the call, I mean, I was relaxed. I guess you could say it, that love field was so pervasive on Saturday's event. And then when I get away from the transmission, I guess my symptoms return, so I get back into the world. That's been a constant ongoing theme for me. So I wanted to tune in today. I had a noticeable shift after tuning in to everybody. So again, I'm glad I was able to come in and be part of it. So I don't know what the solution is for this ongoing feelings that we have. I think we have deep-seated issues that need to be worked out in all of us, whether it's with relationships or with other people in your lives or whatever. But that's where I find comfort, is in these events. So I already feel better just sharing and speaking also. So it's good to be here. That's probably all. Unless there's any comments or anything there.
Thanks, John. That was very clear and comforting to hear you speaking. It came to me during the speak that there must be a lot of loneliness, even more than usual now in the world, because of all the isolation and distancing and lockdowns and stuff. At least that was very... Well, a few women were crying even because they feel so lonely in this event I was the weekend. But for myself, I don't feel lonely. Like, I'm by myself, but that's positive usually. So I wish that people would learn this, to really enjoy being with themselves, just alone, but not feeling lonely. And you are never alone, really, because you're always connected to everyone else, all your brothers and sisters and all the nature and element and stars and the universe, all the galaxies. So there's no way away from that connection. Just a mind that has this illusion of separation and just not being connected to anything.
Yeah, I appreciate those comments. I had an email exchange with Dave earlier, and being lonely actually did come up in my email exchange with him. It's just been kind of a natural evolution for my kids have grown up, and so I don't spend as much time with them. So it's just natural for me to spend more time alone in solitude and working on personal development and trying to grow and trying to learn. You know, that's what I'm into, is personal development and growing. So And with these events, you definitely are growing every weekend that you attend these events. So whether you know it or not, so that should be it. So thanks.
Thanks. I've been growing for so many years. I wonder when does it stop, but of course the growing and you developing, improving, it never stops because the world is changing all the time. You can never be finished.
I wanted to say, I guess, something positive, which kind of slipped my mind. After being a fat fuck for quite a few years and abandoning sports, because I had a terrible back, and plus it got in the way of my drinking and other bits and bobs, I started playing basketball with friends when the first lockdown came about in Serbia, which was in March. So it was beautiful. It's by a lake. It's really green. It's really lush. And there weren't many people around other than a few other brave souls who dared to venture outdoors. And so I've been playing once a week, on the odd occasion, twice a week. And basically for months, I was terrible. I just couldn't do any of the things I thought I knew. I couldn't know how to pull it off. But slowly, as my fitness got better, my body was doing these moves, which I couldn't even visualize. With enough fitness, my body regained its ability to do certain things. And it's really quite a joyous affair. I look, even when I don't necessarily feel like playing, it's just one of those days, you know, I look forward to exercise. I go and I make sure that I sweat my balls off. I need my whole t-shirt to be sweaty with no dry patches. And then I might play well, I might play poorly, I might be irrelevant. But I don't know how to do exercise without chasing a ball. Although I did do some martial arts when I was younger and I absolutely love them. I absolutely love martial arts. And I watched the Khabib fight. It's quite spectacular. Khabib made me think of my own artificial self. Just won't let go. And then I introduced football last week. Which is like five-a-side football in England. That's futsal for others. And I'm playing with guys who are 10 years or more, well, 10 to 14 years younger than me. And I played last week for an entire hour. And I was tired, but I played well. I felt so good. I was shocked that none of them were discussing or talking about my game. I thought we went into the changing room, I would be, you know, talk of the town. And then I realized it's because of the, I'd taken such a long break from playing sport intensely. I literally forgot how well I feel afterwards. And I went yesterday, I'm like, all right, I'm the oldest dude here. I need to stretch properly. I stretched. 2 minutes in, I got terrible groin injuries. No one had touched me. I was in severe pain because I had overstretched myself. I can't be, you know, I'm not fit enough to be playing basketball and football 3 days apart. Not yet. And nevertheless, it wasn't a masochistic pain, but the injury happened within the first 2 or 3 minutes, and I played for the rest of the hour. And if you've ever had groin pain, you kind of know how much it hurts. And I played on, and it wasn't masochistic. I just couldn't let the side down because there wouldn't have been an even number of players. And despite all that pain, once I changed later, I was just in awe of what my body could pull off. You know, I'm 100 kilos, I used to be 103. I've lost about 3 kilos, but it's basically 100 with a bit of muscle. And I obviously, when you're playing sport, and if you have any modicum of fitness, you can commit yourself so much to the very act that there's, you are very much in the moment. You're completely committed. Your body is committed to the action it's doing. There are no outside thoughts. Maybe someone can bark it. Someone who can see something that you hadn't noticed can bark in order. But that's like a word. There are no long sentences. So back door, that's a phrase. That's, you don't need an explanation. You know what you're doing. And it's become a genuine source of joy. I used to love it when I was younger. I've played since I was 4, 5, 6 years old. But it was always about winning. And now I promise you guys, I don't even know if I've won or what the, how many matches did I win that evening out of the hour that we played. It's completely superfluous. I really don't care. I've caught myself on a few occasions doing something and I'm like, wicked. I'm like mid-move. I'm like, that's amazing. Because 6 months ago, I couldn't even jump that high. And it all happened. The reason it happened was thanks to the lockdown and me losing my job. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had the time to go and meet my friends to play. And the only reason I started playing was actually to meet them, despite the emergency measures.
That is the end of this podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this glimpse behind the curtain into the realm of Mars, where men get together and share their vulnerability and insights around what it means to be a man in today's world, which is not a man's world. If anyone thinks it is, they haven't been paying attention. And that's very much the purpose of the affinity groups that I host. There's one on Tuesday mornings, Pacific Standard Time, the men's group, and another the following day on Wednesday, which is a mixed one. Wednesday group is more for participants in Dave O'Shaughnessy's thing. Tuesday group for attending that, there's no obligation to have any experience with Dave O'Shaughnessy or even particular interest. While the qualifications are really just having a pair of testicles and 48 hours sobriety. Although the Tuesday meet is recorded, the recording is only shared with participants, except on these rare occasions where some of it is made public and only with the consent of all involved. We would love to see you there, possibly, depending who you are, what you're made of. You can just contact me directly by email, jason@protonmail.com, or go to the website in the contact area and you'll see there's a little form there that you can fill out. That's it for now. This is The Liminalist. Thanks again for listening and supporting this project.